Every morning you get up and you read the newspaper, it's filled with good news or bad news. Which? Bad news about our community. On the way to work, you buy a Newsweek magazine so you find out what's bad about the world, not just the community. And you rush home to watch the 5 o'clock bad news, and you stay up late so you can see the 10 o'clock bad news, so you can have a bad rest, have a bad dream, get up with a bad attitude, and have a bad day. And our eyes are trained wrong, and we've got to train them to see not evidences of God's absence, but evidences of God's presence everywhere, because He's working.
Aloha. Welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero. Have you ever noticed how you always see what you're looking for? If you're looking to see the best in someone, you'll see them at their best. If you're looking to see the worst, well, that's what you'll get. They'll be at their absolute worst. Well, today, Pastor Wayne is going to teach us the importance of training our eyes to see God's presence. Here's Pastor Wayne with a message entitled, Seeing and Hearing Again.
You ever look for something that's so obviously close and still not see it? You know, some weeks ago, we had a meeting with Pastor Elwin and some of the pastors, and I put my pen somewhere. And after the meeting was over, I looked frantically for that pen. I looked under the papers where we were meeting. It was nowhere to be found. It wasn't an expensive pen. It was just one of these long black pens, but it was gone. And I thought, that Elwin stole it. I couldn't believe it. I was just so, I knew he was pake, but I thought, oh, Elwin, come on. And then I found it. It was behind my ear. I put it behind my ear. I thought, ay, ay, ay. But then, you know, I was thinking, good I put it behind my ear, because if I put it on the table, he would have stolen it. You ever look for something that's so obviously close and still not see it? Sure, we've all done that. But the people that I think were the best at it were the Pharisees. Oh, the Pharisees were an interesting bunch of people. They were trained their whole life to recognize God. They went to school to be able to recognize and hear His voice, to be able to see what God was doing. And when the Messiah actually showed up, they missed Him completely. And even when He began to speak, they hardened their hearts. And I thought, what? Yep, that can happen. Happened to them, can also happen to us. When after a while, something like Christmas becomes so obvious and so normal that when someone says, isn't it about Jesus Christ? Oh, no. It's about something else. We can do the same thing. In fact, let's read what Hebrews 4 and verse 7 says. Let's read it out loud together, would you? Go. Today, if you hear His voice, do not harden your hearts. Yep. Happens to them. Pharisees, it'll happen to us. And even when God shows up, we sort of put our hands out. You know, parking spaces at Christmas time are at a premium. And a story is told of this one guy who was late for a Christmas party. He had to get his wife a Christmas present. And he started going around the shopping center, couldn't find one, because as you know, you go to one of these shopping centers, I mean, you got to park in Kauai to go to Ala Moana. And so he just started praying. This guy never prayed before, you know, but he starts praying. God, he said, please do like one of those miracles I heard about. Lord, make something happen. I need a parking spot. And all of a sudden, miraculously, whoosh, one instantaneously appears. And he said, oh, my God. Because you see, right before this, I forgot to tell you, he says this. He says, God, if you'll make a parking spot appear, I'll quit yelling at my wife, I'll quit swearing, and I'll stop drinking tequila. Well, when God opens up a parking spot, whoosh, he sees it and he says, oh, wait, God. Forget all the stuff I just said. I just found one. Thank you. You know, sometimes even when God does show up, we kind of discount it. One of the things that I'm finding is such a mark of people that really are able to see God is they're starting to mark God out as a source of their blessings. In the beginning, we used to see God everywhere. I mean, we used to see God doing things here and something happens there and we see the Lord involved. Remember when you were first a Christian, you just see God everywhere. I mean, you're so excited and the Lord was working. But after a while, our hearts get calloused and our eyes get dull and we don't see Him. He's still working, but we just don't see Him as much. Oh, we still see church activities. We still see church potlucks. We still see fellowship. We still see church programs, but we stop seeing Jesus as much. As we just get older, we just don't see him. Is he there? Absolutely. I remember some time ago, Anna and I, when we were living in Hilo, our house was a smaller house. We had this popcorn ceiling and low ceilings, actually. And we were turning the mattress over one day. And as I turned it over, I put a big gouge in the ceiling. And oh, no. And that night we were laying in bed and I looked up at that and I said, oh, honey, that looks so ugly. I got to fix it first thing in the morning. That looks so bad. Well, the next morning I'd forgotten I'd had an appointment. So zoom, I'm out the house. The next night we're laying in bed. That's ugly. This weekend, I better do something about it. And so the weekend came, but I had other activities. The next week we were laying there and I thought, that looks pretty bad. Not as bad as it did last week, but it's pretty bad. I should call somebody in to get that fixed. And about a week later, my wife was laying there. She said, honey, that looks pretty bad. You ever gonna do anything about it? I said, honey, just turn off the lights. You won't see it. 3 years later, when we sold the house, it was still there. You know, it's funny because in the beginning, isn't that true? You just see everything, and then for some reason, it gets commonplace, and you don't see it as much anymore. Well, how then do you get your eyes back to that condition where you can see him rather than just religious stuff happening? Where have we gone wrong, where we slip off? I want you to know that slipping off away from his presence happens unintentionally. But listen, but getting back will be intentional. It's unintentional to drift. It must be intentional to return. You don't get back any other way. There has to be an intentionality. And so we want to talk about three of those as to how to recondition again our eyes to begin to see Christ. And so would you write in number one, here's some principles that'll help us to see Christ. The first is, would you write down, train your eyes for seeing his presence. You got to train your eyes. Even David asked that. Let's read what he says in Psalm 119. Go, open my eyes that I may behold wonderful things from your law. Yeah. You've got to ask God to help you to train your eyes to see good things. Because really, you're going to see what you're looking for. Isn't that right? If you're looking for bad things, you're going to see bad. If you're looking for people with zits, you're going to find zits on everybody. Everybody's got one or two somewhere. And so you're going to find them. What you're looking for, you're going to see. And if you've been trained to look for what's wrong and problems and what you don't like, guess what? You're going to see problems and wrong and stuff you don't like everywhere. But we live in a society that trains us that way. I mean, think about it. Every morning you get up and you read the newspaper. It's filled with good news or bad news? Which? Bad news about our community. So you read that every day. And then after that, that's not enough. On the way to work, you buy a Newsweek magazine. So you find out what's bad about the world, not just the community. And you rush home to watch the 5 o'clock bad news. And you stay up late so you can see this 10 o'clock bad news. So you can have a bad rest, have a bad dream, get up with a bad attitude and have a bad day. Do that for 30 years and see what happens. And you see, what happens is then we're trained, our eyes are trained wrong, and we've got to train them to see not evidences of God's absence, but evidences of God's presence everywhere because he's working. You just got to see him. You just got to see he's everywhere. I mean, don't get weird because some people see, you know, the face of Jesus in a, you know, a grilled cheese sandwich and a pizza burn. Oh, good night. Now, I'm not talking about that, but I am talking about seeing Christ in everything because he is there in real ways. But listen carefully. If you can't see God, how are you going to be a part of cooperating with what he's doing? Because see, what happens after a while is if you stop seeing Christ, we as Christians become spectators. We spectate what God is doing. We don't participate in what God is doing. And if we can't see him and he's inviting us to be a part of something he's doing, we'll walk right by it. We'll just miss it completely. You walk right by and he's doing something, inviting us to be a part of a miracle, but we don't see him anymore. We just see religious stuff. This was written by a Christian physician in Denver. It must have been written maybe last year around Christmas time because the setting is a cold wintry afternoon. And so he writes, and let me read it to you. And it says this: my car began sputtering and choking right on the highway. And I barely managed to coast, upset and angry, into a local gas station, somewhat glad just to find a warm spot so I can wait for the tow truck. I tried my car again, and it wouldn't even turn over. I was just about ready to make the call when I looked up, and a woman had come out of the quick store there, the little Circle K or whatever. She came out and she slipped on some ice and fell into one of the gas pumps. So I quickly got up and went to see if she was okay. When I got there, it looked like she was more overcome by sobs than any injury. She dropped something, so I picked it up for her. It was a nickel. Behind the crying woman was an ancient suburban SUV crammed full of stuff and three kids. Her gas pump read $4.95. I asked her if she was okay and if she needed help, but she just kept saying, "I just don't want the kids to see me crying." She said she was driving to California and things in life were just a little hard for her right now. I smiled and said, "So were you praying?" She backed off, and I said to her, "No, I'm not some weird religious person. I just said that because God must have heard you, because I think he sent me." I took out my credit card and swiped it through the card reader so that she could fill up her car completely. And while it was fueling, I walked next door to McDonald's and bought two big bags of food and some gift certificates for more and a big cup of coffee. She gave the food to the kids and they attacked it like wolves. She told me her boyfriend had left her 2 months before and she'd not been able to make any ends meet after that. And she didn't have any money for January's rent. So in desperation, she said, "I called my parents who live in California. I hadn't talked to them in over 5 years. And they graciously said that I could stay with them until I got on my feet again." So she said, "I packed everything in this car and my three children and we're on our way to California." I gave her my gloves and a little hug and asked if I could pray for her and her kids. And she looked at me and she said, "Are you like an angel or something?" And I spoke to her and I said, "Sweetie, at this time of the year, like Christmas, angels are really, really busy. So sometimes God has to use just regular people like me." It was incredible to be a part of God's miracles, he said. And when I got into my car, wouldn't you know it, it started right up. I'm going to take it to the shop tomorrow, just in case. But I suspect when I take it there, the mechanic won't find anything wrong. You see, God wants us to be a part of his miracles. But if we don't see what he's doing, if we don't take time for it, we're going to just basically spectate God this year. And how many of us have spectated God for far too long? And it's time we start to say, "God, would you open my eyes that I might see?" Now, I have to admit to you that sometimes God seems silent. Does that mean he's far away, he's taking a vacation? No. But he will seem silent. And some have asked me, "Wayne, well, what's that for?" Well, you know, God will at times seem silent, but it's because he has a purpose. And I want to tell you one of the greatest purposes for God's silence. There are certain character qualities that are so important and crucial to life, a life essential that can be applied to your marriage, your family, your friendships, your job, your vocation, your ministry. But this gem will not be built except under the silence of God. You say, "What?" Yeah. Let me tell you what that gem is. That gem is called commitment. You see, for commitment to be built, there's going to be times God's going to take away all of the emotions, all of the fun feelings, all of the niceties, all of the fluff, and you're left stark, raving, nothing. I was going to say naked, but that didn't sound good. You're just dry. You have no niceties. But sometimes when God has given you a call and he removes all of the nice stuff, doesn't mean your call ends. It just means now you take what used to be fueled by fun and emotion or just the fluff of it all. And when it's all gone, that turns into a choice, a dedication, a stalwart endurance, a commitment, a decision that I make because God's called me to this, not when it's in attendance with nice emotions. It's a call regardless of how I feel. And now you start building something called commitment. Listen, commitment is not built except when God is able to take away all of this other stuff. Now you build commitment. You don't build it any other way. Now you build commitment. Because see, for a lot of Christians, we run at a huge, fast velocity. We have great speed, but we're shallow. And sometimes God has to remove some stuff so that we go deep and get traction. That's where the roots are built so that we stay stalwart when the winds blow and the storms rage. But that kind of commitment and depth only takes place when he moves away, takes away the emotions, the feelings, the niceties, the fluff, all of that stuff, and it's all gone. And now you build commitment because I'm doing this because of a decision, not because I feel good. It's because of a choice that I make, and I know this is what God's called me to do. Once you build that, when God adds everything back, do you understand the depth that you have now? Now that thing called commitment is now applicable to life, to your job, to your vocation, to friendships, to marriage, to family. Without that, you can be involved in all of these things, but when the heat gets too much in the kitchen, we bail. Listen, next time you're ready to bail, stop, because God may just be doing something deeper than you realize. It's maybe that he's starting to build commitment. Jesus tells us about that in the New Testament, and we find that repeated or reiterated in the Old Testament. God did that with the children of Israel. It's in the wilderness that it seemed like God was so silent. But listen to what he says. In fact, let's read it together. Number two, would you write down, first of all, understand how his silence builds the treasure of commitment. Understand how his silence builds the treasure of commitment. And let's read what happens in the wilderness when the children of Israel thought God was silent. Let's read it. Go. You shall remember all the way which the Lord your God has led you in the wilderness these 40 years. Why? That he might humble you, testing you to know what was in your heart, whether you would keep his commandments or not. Yeah, sometimes he removes all of that niceties, and now you begin to learn commitment. We live in a society where we have not taught commitment. So that's why you see so much fracturing of churches and loyalties that aren't there. Even in our government, you just don't see a deep sense of commitment to what they believe, to the morals that they espouse. It's not there. Because somewhere along the line, this precious gem of commitment was not built. Because when God pulled all of the niceties away, we bail because I don't have the feelings for it anymore. And we never build commitment. So we can't transfer that to other areas of our life. You say, well, isn't it when God's silent, does he just take a vacation? Mm-mm. Listen to what David says. Let's read it together. Go. Where can I go from your spirit? Or where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, you are there. In other words, God is always very close. But just because he's close does not mean that he's obviously recognized. It changes your life when you recognize his presence and respond to it. So you are no longer spectating God, but you're cooperating with him. And in moments of silence, he's building something far deeper than you ever realized. Don't bail yet. Can I give you a word as parents, those of you that are parents? When your child enters into a sport like soccer or some kind of club like Boy Scouts or Girl Scouts or Brownies, whatever it might be, never just say, sure, you can join, and give them no finish date. If you don't give them a finish date, sure, you can join. Well, even if they're part of it for 2-3 years, when they're done, they quit. They have to quit being a Cub Scout, quit being a Boy Scout, quit this or quit that. Always give them a finish line. We're going to be in soccer until the end of this season. So even if before the season you don't want to continue, we will continue. And at the end of the season, you will not quit, but you will finish. And then you can decide if you want to re-up for the next season or not. But I don't want you to quit in the middle. I want you to finish. You're teaching commitment. So you always have it. Otherwise, they could be in something for 3 years, but when they get tired of it, they quit. No, you don't quit. You finish. So you always get a finish date in line and let them cross that line. Then they are finished. Now they can re-up or they can be done, but they haven't quit. I remember when Aaron was about 9 years old, he wanted to join judo. And just a little tyke, and I thought, judo? Yeah, I guess his friends were in judo, and he wanted me to buy him that, you know, that white gi, you know, with the belt, and look kind of cool. And so I said, okay, and it was about November. I said, we're going to go through June then, and we'll see. So we're going to go to June. Now, June 1, he said, oh, okay, I just want to join judo. So I said, okay, I'll buy you the gi, because it was $100 and some. And I said, I'll buy you this, but remember, if it gets too tough in January, February, March, when are we done? June. All right, June 1. All right. So I bought him the gi, and first day there, oh, he just loved it. He thought it was so cool to walk around with this thing, you know? And then he got thrown a couple of times, and it wasn't real nice. And then he came home, oh, I hurt over here, I hurt over there. Okay, well, the next time judo came, come on. He wasn't so excited the second time, third time, a little less, and it starts to decrease. After about 3 months, I said, Aaron, it's time to go. I don't want to go to judo. I said, no, you're going to go. No, no, I hurt over here, hurt over here, hurt over here. So I said, okay, you're going to go anyway, and you'll sit and stay on the sidelines and heal, but you gotta go. So I took him, he actually sat on the bench with me, and we just sat there and watched his class do his thing, and then I took him back home. After a couple more weeks, I don't wanna go. I said, and sometimes kicking and screaming into the car, we went. But he stayed with it, and when June 1 came around, he didn't quit, he finished. And you build commitment into them, even when they say, I don't want to know, you're going because we made a decision. And even though you don't feel like it, we're going to finish. We're not going to quit. I don't care if I take you there and sit with you on the bench for the next 3 months, you're going to finish this. And what happens is something called commitment is built into him. And if you don't have commitment, you watch how you'll drop out of relationships and drop out of friendships and drop out of all kinds of things because you don't have the sustaining glue called commitment. It was never built. And it's only going to be built when all of the fun stuff and emotions are removed. Is it still a decision that you need to make? And if it is, you stick with it. And so now he can take commitment, and he puts it into his ministry there, and he puts it into his family. He's married now. That commitment now, he's going to be committed to his wife. That boy owes me a lot of money. I'm not just thinking about it now, you know. He owes me a lot. So what is the definition of commitment? Would you write it down? It says this in the bullet. It says, commitment is staying true to a worthy decision long after the emotion of making that decision has passed. Commitment is staying true to a worthy decision long after the emotion of making that decision has passed. You see, when the emotion has passed, now you build commitment. Now you build commitment. And that's what'll give you depth, and that's what'll give you traction for the long run. So next time you're just ready to bail out, stop a little bit, because God may be building something deeper than you realize. But let me give you the third thing that is probably one of the most important in conditioning your eyes to see Christ. Would you write down number 3? Cultivate a spirit of gratitude. Cultivate a spirit of gratitude. Folks, listen, I am convinced that God is more concerned about my being grateful than just about anything else.
You've just heard part one of a message entitled Seeing and Hearing Again by Dr. Wayne Cordero. We'll pick it up right there on tomorrow's broadcast. We invite you to visit our website where you'll find more helpful resources from Pastor Wayne, including his messages on podcast. That web address is www.enewhope.org. Again, that's enewhope.org. Until next time, for Pastor Wayne Cordero, this is Del Gibbs wishing you God's very best and aloha.